You're listening to The Odds Cast, the original UFC betting podcast that's straight to the point. Hosted by leading MMA oddsmaker Nick Kalikas and MMA journalist Brian Heminger, they provide you the absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting. MMAoddsbreaker.com. Don't place your wagers without us.
Welcome to the Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on ESPN event, which takes place in Phoenix, Arizona. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley lost one unit for UFC 234 with his one-unit free bet on Colin Potter at plus 220 odds. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC 234 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on ESPN Plus and ESPN this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on ESPN Plus is a women's strawweight bout between Alexandra Albu, who is 3-0, and Emily Whitmire, who is 3-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Albu opened minus 195. Whitmire opened plus 155 as the underdog. Right now, looking over at the current odds at our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu, so always make sure to give those guys some love. Right now over at BetDSI, it's Albu minus 125. The comeback on Whitmire is at minus 105. So line margins have tightened up and more action coming in on Whitmire at the high price. And really, I'm not surprised. I don't blame the early bettors to come in and take that plus 155-ish on the plus money there. I think there was some value there, and there still very well be some value left here at the current price. I mean, this is going to be a very close fight. I think Albu, obviously, is the more hyped fighter. She's undefeated. She has a lot more going for her. I think this is she's more marketable for the UFC as well. So I think they're obviously going to get behind her a little bit more, and this is kind of played out for her to get a reasonable opponent with a chance to win here. And she can. I mean, she's a favorite for a reason, a slight favorite for a reason, that is, because she does have some power. She's a developing fighter. She's still a little raw, but on the feet, she does present some problems for a lot of these women at 115 pounds. She does, like I said, she has some underrated power. She has some athleticism, not a bad ground game to go along with it. But again, that's still developing. I think that's kind of a spot where you can really take advantage of, especially Whitmire. I think her best attribute is obviously the ground, and she's going to try to exploit that. Whitmire is the type of fighter, obviously a former tough standout, but since then, you know, made some waves, beating a very game Jamie Moyle in her official debut after the Ultimate Fighter. I guess she had the Ultimate Fighter finale against Jillian Robertson. But after that, I mean, she bounced back from that Robertson upset loss and came back and defeated a very game Jamie Moyle, like I said. So I think Whitmire's on the right track. She's improving her game overall. She needs to keep on working on her striking. So if this stays on the feet, I give the edge to Albu because I think she'll be landing the harder shots, but it'll probably be pretty competitive everywhere this fight takes place. I just think Whitmire has a better advantage on the ground, and I think she can win some scrambles and possibly present some problems for Albu there and steal a decision if it's a close competitive fight, which I think it's going to be. So this is a tough one for me. I'm kind of going back and forth. Like I said, I understand why the plus money got gobbled up earlier on in this fight, and I think that Whitmire still has a little bit of value, so I'm going to side with her as well. So the pick is Whitmire, not a confident one, but I think this is going to be a close enough fight that she can still steal a decision or maybe even finish this fight late.
I really think that, while Alexandra Albu is pretty raw overall, she makes up for it with her athleticism and physicality. I mean, she's one of the stronger fighters at 115 pounds, but she just doesn't have a lot of experience yet at 3-0, with two of those, wins have already come inside the octagon, but at very low skill level of, competition. So Emily Whitmire, I think, is probably going to be her toughest test to date. Whitmire, being from the Ultimate Fighter, having fought at 125 pounds, I think, she's going to present a bit of a test here. Whitmire isn't that bad of a striker, and she's got a decent submission game. So, Albu's going to be playing with fire a little bit. If she's shooting in for takedowns, she might walk into something. But on the feet, I think Albu will be the more aggressive fighter. Albu will be hitting a little bit harder. I don't know if Albu has that good at striking defense, she's got her nose bloodied up a little bit in fights. So, Whitmire might be able to, land a few shots there, while Albu's stalking forward. And as this fight wears on, you know, Albu, she kind of uses her athleticism more than technique at times. And I think that costs her in terms of her conditioning. You'll see that she does slow down quite a bit at times. And, I think the main issue here is, will Albu slow down enough for Whitmire's, technique to take over? Because I think at least in the first round, if not the second round, Albu will be able to overcompensate for Whitmire being a little bit better on the ground, maybe a little bit more technical. Albu will be able to overcompensate for that with her strength, with her aggression, and with, her physicality. So, I think, Albu is going to win the first two rounds and then probably lose the last round. But the main question will be, will Whitmire be able to get a finish in the last round or a 10-8 round or something? And I'm just not sure that she'll be able to do that. So I'm going to side with Albu here. I think that she wins a decision, but I wouldn't be shocked if Whitmire takes advantage of a faded Albu as this fight wears on. But my pick is going to be Albu. Now, moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Hanan Barrow, who is 34-7, taking on Luke Sanders, who is 12-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Sanders open -140, the comeback on Barrow, even money. Right now over at BetDSI, we're currently seeing Sanders at -180, the comeback +150 on Barrow. So more action coming in Sanders' way. You know what? I agree with that as well. Barrow, we're seeing a case of a former champion, a former dominant champion, a former amazing champion just hit the decline. I mean, the guy definitely doesn't have what he once did a few years back. He's far beyond his prime, and each fight to me, he looks like he's a fading fighter and he gets worse and worse. So here in Sanders, you have a kind of not a young gun by any means. I mean, Sanders obviously at age 33, but in MMA years, he's still fairly young. I mean, he's got 15 fights compared to well over 40 for Barrow. So that tells you something there. And Sanders honestly is one of these guys that's had some misfortune thus far in the UFC, in my opinion. I think he's way better than he's been out there performing. And, you know, and unfortunately for him, you know, he suffered a couple losses so far in the UFC that were, to me, kind of surprising in some ways, you know. I mean, if you look at how they went down, you know, he was kind of a front runner than getting caught by submission. And two of those actually were by leg locks, which is a head scratcher as well. So those are issues that Sanders definitely needs to resolve. I mean, ground defense, fight IQ at times as well. But man, outside of that, if you watch some of his fights pre-UFC and you just watch this guy compete, the guy's very solid in all areas. He's a little spark plug. He's quick. He's powerful. He's got really good technique. He's game on the ground. He's got good wrestling. I mean, he's a total package, really. Now, of course, Barrow, in my opinion, is still overall the better mixed martial artist. I think he's a little bit more dangerous. And of course, like I said, in his prime, he was such a threat. I mean, there'd be no competition, in my opinion. Barrow would go out there and finish Sanders, but this isn't a Barrow that's in his prime. So, in my opinion here, Barrow early on is going to be at his most dangerous spot. I mean, in the first round, so Sanders is going to have to be cautious. But as this fight progresses, I think Sanders is going to find his spot, pick up the pace a little bit, and start taking it to Barrow as it goes. So I think Sanders could win on the cards. I think Sanders might even get a finish late in, as it goes as well here. So it's hard not to pick Sanders. And again, at -140 price, I understand why the early action came in that way. And it's hard not to like Sanders still at the current price slightly as well. But, I mean, you know, never know with these guys that are, you know, aging champions. We saw recently, again, with Jose Aldo, he performed relatively well. I mean, Anderson Silva against Adesanya this past weekend, he performed relatively well as well. So these guys can have their day, get that spark back a little bit and perform well. And if that's the case, Barrow definitely has a chance in this fight. But I don't know. I still have to go with Sanders. I think, like I said, from what I've seen from Barrow recently, it's not good. And I think Sanders is going to get back on track and kind of show to the UFC and I think the overall MMA community that he belongs on the roster. And he has a shot at potentially climbing that ladder enough to make some waves in the future. So the pick is Sanders, and let's see how this one plays out.
Yeah, both of these fighters have underperformed so drastically. I mean, it's crazy that they're fighting so early on the card, considering their talent level. I mean, Hanan Barrow was at one point one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the planet, or at least in the discussion, during his reign of terror when he was the champion at bantamweight. And Luke Sanders entered the UFC, and he looked like he was going to be the next big thing. But then after dominating some opponents, he had some opponents come back against him and get some submissions and then knocking him out. And then he hasn't really fought the same since he went on that little skid. I mean, he is too talented to have a losing record inside the octagon. Let's just say that. And, but at this point, both of these guys have been fighting very poorly, overall, but at least Sanders, I think, still has a little bit of gas left in the tank. I don't think that he's on a decline. I think that, you know, he can still turn it around. But Hayden Barrow, I mean, after so many fights and after taking the damage that he took in those battles against TJ Dillashaw, I just don't know if he was ever the same after that. And it's shown, you know, that during his recent skid where he has really, really struggled with a move up a weight class, then giving up on that and dropping down a weight class, back to bantamweight and still not being able to find success. So, at least with Sanders, I still think that, you know, even though he's 33 years old, he's only had 15 professional fights. So he can still find a way to make it happen. With Barrow, I mean, he is so talented, but it just doesn't seem like he's the same fighter he used to be. And I don't know if he'll ever be able to recapture that. You know, Sanders, I think, is the better wrestler. Barrow has the better submission game, obviously, because Sanders, for some reason, keeps getting caught with heel hooks and knee bars. So that's something you have to look for at this point. And, you know, it's been a recurring theme now in Sanders' losses. I would say Sanders and Barrow have similar chin strength. But Barrow probably has a little bit more power. But that being said, I think Sanders is going to be the more aggressive fighter in this contest. So as long as he doesn't allow this himself to be put on his back and put in a position where Barrow is able to utilize his biggest strength, which might be his grappling against Sanders, then I think Sanders actually has a good shot of just wearing Barrow down and outpointing him over the course of three rounds. Now, I wasn't that impressed with Sanders' most recent victory over Patrick Williams, but you know, at least he got the job done against somebody he was supposed to get the job done against. So this is definitely a much stiffer test for Sanders, but, you know, he is facing a fighter that is lost five of his last six fights and just has looked like a shell of himself. So, you know, maybe that gives Sanders a little bit more confidence to turn up that aggression again, because when Sanders was at his best, you know, he just felt like he was unstoppable. That 10-7 round he had against Yuri Alcantara was unbelievable. So I know that he's capable of being that guy again. I just don't think that Hayden Barrow is. So I'm going to side with Luke Sanders as well. I think that he can win a decision here, but I wouldn't bet it because I'm terrified that he's going to get caught with a heavy punch or submitted out of nowhere again, because he just submission defense has been a big issue with him. But my pick is going to be Sanders, but I am not that confident with it whatsoever. Now, dropping back down to the women's strawweight division, we have Jessica Penney, who is 12-5, taking on Jody Esquivel, who is 6-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Penny open minus 185, Esquivel plus 145. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, we're seeing Penny minus 140, Esquivel plus 110. So line margins have tightened up, and there's a price drop. More money coming in Esquivel early on. I'll tell you what, another person that's kind of underperformed so far in the UFC is Esquivel. I mean, you know, she's had a pretty decent track record and resume pre-UFC, even though she hasn't had, you know, a ton of fights on a resume. I believe she has 10 fights overall. But, you know, she's had some solid experience against good competition. So making the UFC hasn't been exactly easy for her. The UFC's, you know, loaded her with some pretty stiff competition off the rip. But that being said, I think she has underperformed a little bit. And Penne, on the other hand, is coming in off of almost a 2-year layoff. And she hasn't really been handed any favors in the UFC either. I mean, her losses, she's on a 3-fight losing skid. But if you look at the losses, I mean, they're to Jacek, Andrade, of course, and then that last fight against Danielle Taylor. I mean, realistically, that could have went either way. It's a very close fight. So, you know, take what it is for that. But Penne has fought awesome competition, and she has experience, again, before the UFC from The Ultimate Fighter. I mean, she's faced who's who in her career. And she has, you know, a lot of skill to go along with long, limbs for the weight class, ability to submit you on the ground. She's got decent stand up. She works behind the lead jab pretty fairly well. She does have tall man defense or tall woman defense in this case a little bit. She's hittable. She gets marked up a lot as well. But she's a warrior, man. I mean, there's a lot to like about Penne. I mean, like I said, she's a finisher out there. She shows up to fight. She's tough as nails. She just, like I said, on this 3-fight losing skid, she suffered some, you know, tough competition, and despite that, took a little time off, and now she's back, and she wants to get on track and, you know, show the world she's back and belongs in the UFC as well. So this is going to be a good fight, and it's a winnable fight for her, but I think it's going to be a competitive fight because, like I said, I think Esquivel presents a lot of problems as well. She can be aggressive at times. She hits hard. So Penne, again, eating some damage along the way, she needs to be cautious on the feet a little bit here, especially with her time off. Let's see if she does have any cage rust in this fight. So I think it's going to be a competitive fight anywhere the fight takes place. I think Penne has a bigger advantage, obviously, on the ground. She's capable of submitting Esquivel if the fight gets there. But overall, I think what we're going to see is this probably will play out and be more of a striking affair than anything else. And we see it likely going 3 rounds with Penne edging out a very tight decision in her comeback to the UFC. So I'm glad to see her back. Like I said, she's a warrior, in my opinion. She's a great fighter. This should be a close competitive matchup, though, with Esquivel. And I'm excited to see how this plays out. So the pick is Penne to win a very close decision.
And I'm with Nick here. I actually think that Penne won't just win it. I think that she can get a finish here. Esquivel is just not that good. I mean, she's lost on The Ultimate Fighter, and then she got brought back to the UFC to face Kovalkiewicz, and she lost that fight, and then she most recently lost a decision to Jessica Aguilar. And, you know, I just think at this point in their careers, Aguilar, you know, has faded enough that Penne is better than her. And Esquivel just really hasn't impressed me that much. She doesn't push a high enough pace on the feet. She doesn't do enough. And her 1-3 record inside the octagon is, I think, very misleading, because you look at who she lost to, and she got finished by Joanna Jędrzejczyk at the peak of her run as champion, and then Jessica Andrade finished her as she was on her way up to becoming a top contender in the division. And the other loss was a decision that easily could have gone against and the other loss was a decision that easily could have gone her way against Danielle Taylor. So I think in this fight, Penne is going to have the edge on the feet. She's going to have the reach advantage. I think that her boxing is at least as good as Esquivel's, if not better. And her ground game is significantly better than Esquivel. She uses her length extremely well. She's very flexible, and she can really put her opponents in some uncomfortable positions. You saw that in her initial UFC win. So I think this fight is going to be a nice bounce back for her. Esquivel is near the bottom tier of the UFC women's strawweight division, and Penne should absolutely be able to get the win here. So I think at some point she does get it to the floor, and then she utilizes that length and flexibility on the ground and puts Esquivel in some uncomfortable situations and eventually forces a tap. So my pick is going to be Jessica Penne. I think she wins by submission. Now, moving on to the ESPN preliminary card. At lightweight, we have Scott Holtzman, who is 12-2, taking on Nick Lentz, who is 29-9-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Holtzman opened -175, Lentz opened +135. Right now, over at BetDSI, it's -180 for Holtzman, the comeback +150 on Lentz. So not a bad opener. Line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming into this fight as well. It's fair to say this will be a competitive fight, and you got to give the slight edge to Holtzman in this spot. I mean, overall, skill set, experience, you got to give the edge to Lentz. He is, even though he's a younger fighter, he's the older fighter in MMA years, obviously, because, man, the guy's been through so many wars, and we're talking about fighting good competition. Lentz has fought some tremendous competition between lightweight, featherweight and then back up to lightweight now. I mean, he's been on the roster for a long time, quality wins, pulled off some decent upsets along the way in his career. Very well-rounded fighter. Another guy that's, I was talking about Penny being tough as nails, a warrior. Lentz is in that category as well. I mean, just hard to finish. And again, he just brings it, man. And he can beat you on the feet. He can submit you. That guillotine choke he has is nasty. A lot of good things about Lentz to like. So this is a good test for the up-and-coming Holtzman, even though he's 35 years old. Again, in MMA years, he's definitely a lot younger than Lentz in this spot. Holtzman starting to come in his own. I mean, come into his own. He's really doing some good things, and it's I think his confidence level is through the roof right now of coming over a very impressive coming off of a very impressive win over Alan Patrick. I mean, that was you know, a thing of beauty to watch, honestly. A lot of people didn't expect him to perform that well against Patrick that was having his way with most opponents. So, you know, he backed that up coming off of a Horcher win as well. So that was, I mean, back-to-back solid wins for him. And he's getting, again, more confident. And Holtzman's a pretty well-rounded fighter in his own right, like I was talking about Lentz. On the feet, he can beat you. He's got some speed. He's got some power. He's got some fairly clean technique. He's got some good wrestling. He does have some flaws on the ground, though. I mean, he can get put on his back, and he can get controlled at times. But you're going to have to be a very dominant type of wrestler and a very strong guy to hold Holtzman down and really control him on the ground. I mean, he scrambles up fairly well, and I think these guys can kind of get in that situation. If they go to the ground, I think these guys can kind of out-scramble each other back up. I mean, and again, takedown defense, you could say the lack of that for Lentz as well. That's kind of been his issue in the past. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets top position in this fight. More so than not, it's probably Holtzman. And if he does get top, he needs to be cautious with that guillotine choke, like I mentioned. But outside of that, I think Holtzman's pace, he'll keep a higher pace throughout the three rounds. And again, with his confidence level, he has a good camp and a good team behind him with the MMA lab and a lot of good things to like about Holtzman right now. So I think the timing is right for him to come in and get a very solid win over Nick Lentz. Lentz looked great, obviously, in his last fight against Maynard. He did what he had to do and got an impressive finish there. So he's coming in off some momentum as well. So this is a great time, like I said, for Holtzman to pick up a quality win over a savvy vet in Lentz. And I think that's what's going to happen. But it's going to be hard to finish Lentz. I think it's going to be a close competitive decision, 29-28, Holtzman type of decision, and what should be a pretty entertaining fight for us all. So Holtzman is the pick for me.
And I know that Holtzman is actually older than Nick Lentz, but he has so much less wear and tear, and he's a lot younger than Nick Lentz in terms of fight years, as we like to call it. Lentz is definitely starting to slow down a little bit, in my opinion. He's always going to be dangerous with the guillotine choke. That's his go-to submission. So if anybody shoots in on him, you have to protect your neck. I mean, Will Brooks was the most recent example of that. But in this fight, I think Holtzman is going to have an opportunity to really showcase a lot of the improvements that he's made since he initially fought in the UFC. Because if you remember, dating all the way back to his fight against Drew Dober and Josh Emmett and Cody Pfister, he was getting taken down a lot in those fights early in his run. And he's really been improving his ground game to the point where he actually was out grappling Alan Patrick in his last fight, a guy that typically out grapples almost everybody he faces and was able to not just win, but actually finish him from top position with elbows. So I've been really impressed with the evolution of Holtzman, and it definitely feels like he still has something to give and that he's still getting better. And with Nick Lentz, I think that he's kind of been that same guy for a while now, especially since he moved up to lightweight because the weight cut was getting moved back up to lightweight because the weight cut was getting too intense. Lentz kind of peaked during his featherweight run right up until he fought like Chad Mendez when he was right in there in the top 15. This time around, I think Holtzman actually might be able to get top position on the ground. I think Holtzman is overall a little bit better in terms of the power of his strikes. I think Lentz is going to balance that out a little bit with some occasional reckless aggression, but he's also been a fighter that at times has been really boring. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how Lentz kind of responds to how he started to slow down a little bit. You always got to be careful with a veteran because, you know, even if they are starting to slow down, they've still got a lot of experience, a lot of savvy, and they can pull things out when you least expect it. But I think this time around, I expect Holtzman to just do a little bit better than Lentz in the stand-up. I think Holtzman can win the grappling exchanges. He just needs to make sure not to leave his neck out there if and when the fight does go to the floor. So my pick's going to be Scott Holtzman. I think that he wins by decision. Now, dropping down to the women's flyweight division, we have Andrea Lee, who is 9-2, taking on Ashley Evans-Smith, who is 6-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Lee opened -215, Evans-Smith +165, and right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's Lee at -170, the comeback on Evans-Smith at +140, so line margins have tightened up. A little bit more action coming in on Evan Smith as an underdog. And this should be another good fight. I think Andrea Lee is a very marketable fighter, obviously. She's got a lot of talent, a lot of skill. She keeps on improving her overall game. I mean, she has ability everywhere the fight takes place. I mean, sky's the limit for her, really. But she does have some flaws in her game. One, I think, is IQ at times as the fight progresses. I mean, the two losses that she has on a resume, I think, were winnable fights for her. So that, you know, like I said, that's kind of a head scratcher in some ways. So she has these performances at times where kind of let you down. I mean, because like I said, when she's on, man, I tell you what, she's hard to stop. She has accuracy on the feet. She's a busy, accurate striker. Like I just said, she has decent defense there. She has the ability to wrestle, take the fight to the ground, has some really good jiu-jitsu skill offensively, especially. I mean, she's a threat everywhere, but she has been put on her back. She has been out grappled. She's been submitted before as well. And again, sometimes decision making from Lee is a little sketchy now, and she's going to have to be smart here against this fight with Evan Smith. Evan Smith is, I think, more of a grinding type of fighter. I mean, in my opinion, she's improving on the feet. She still has some ways to go, obviously, there, but she pushes, you know, forward and is aggressive at times. She has a background in wrestling, of course, so she's, again, that typical grinding style. She's not going to blow you out in any aspect of the game. In my opinion here against Lee, she's going to want to take this fight to the ground, get top position, if anything, or hold her up against a cage and make this kind of a gritty, dirty type of fight and not leave too much space, I think, in the middle, because I think Lee's speed and her accuracy is going to be a problem for Evan Smith, because Evan Smith, her strike defense is definitely a problem. And again, her submission defense at times can be as well. So I think if there's going to be a finish in this fight, the door is wide open for Lee to come in and take advantage of some of the flaws that Evan Smith has. But again, if this hits the scorecards, I think it has a chance to be a pretty competitive fight, because Evan Smith can kind of make this a dirty, ugly type of fight and make it a grinding fight that fans might not be a fight friendly type of situation for the fans out there. I should say that. But if that's the case, then it would be a close decision possible, and I think Evan Smith could come in there and steal it. But I don't think that's the case here. I think Lee will find her spot, and again, I think she has some momentum. She has a lot to prove. She's looked good so far in the UFC, and I think if she keeps on improving and getting better, man, I'll tell you what, she can put a heck of a run together and climb up that ladder at 125 pounds really fast. So we'll see what Andrea Lee is capable of. I think she does get the job done here, and again, probably inside the distance along the way over Evan Smith, but should be a pretty good fight.
Yeah, Andrea Lee is definitely a fighter worthy of getting a little bit of hype behind. She is an exciting striker, and she has, I would say, some of the better hands in the women's flyweight division. She's got some power. She's just capable of doing some serious damage with her striking. And Ashley Evans-Smith, while she actually does come from more of a wrestling and grappling background, you see her time and time again getting suckered into stand-up fights. Like even most recently, her win was actually via the stand-up. She held her own on the feet against Beck Rawlings, but you got to remember, when Evan Smith came into the UFC, she was 135 pounds. Rawlings was 115, and Evan Smith has fought at 145 even in the past. So that was, it just seems a little strange to compare that and say that all of a sudden Evan Smith has great striking when she beat somebody that has fought at weight classes 30 pounds lighter than her. But this time around, I really think that Andrea Lee is going to present some serious challenges to Smith. Smith, as Nick mentioned, doesn't have the best striking defense, and Andrea Lee doesn't really have that either. But I don't think that Smith has the level of striking to really punish Lee for that. And Smith doesn't have the power to really punish Lee for that. And I expect Lee to just get the better of Smith and outpoint her and potentially hurt her on the feet, over the course of three rounds. If Evan Smith has any chance in this fight, she needs to get this fight to the floor and put Lee on her back and just take away the striking aspect of it. But she's really not that good at getting fights to the floor, despite her grappling background that I mentioned, having barely 25% success rate on her takedown so far in the UFC, and she's been submitted as well. So I expect Andrea Lee to be able to fend off the takedowns and force this into a stand-up fight, and it should be an entertaining one, because Evan Smith, even though she's not that great of a striker, she's usually, you know, willing to throw down. So I expect that both of these ladies will be swinging hard, and Andrea Lee should get the better of it, just like she did in her fight of the night performance against Veronica Mercado in her UFC debut. So Andrea Lee's going to be my pick. Now, moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Manny Bermudez, who is 13-0, taking on Benito Lopez, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Bermudez, minus 305. Lopez, plus 225 was the opening line. Right now over at BetDSI, we saw a drop. It's minus 190 at Bermudez, plus 150 for Lopez. So more money coming in Lopez's way. A bit surprised. I mean, there's a lot of hype surrounding Bermudez for sure. Lopez, of course, Benito Lopez, a very popular fighter in his own right. I mean, you know, from the Contender Series and beyond that, he's just been a hyped fighter from Team Alpha Male or whatnot. You know, we heard a lot of things, great things coming into the UFC, and the way he's fought, he's proven that he is an exciting fighter and he's well worth watching. I mean, again, another guy that has a very well-rounded skill set. Fun to watch. I mean, he's a warrior. We were talking about, there's a lot of warriors on this fight. I mean, well, obviously all these guys that step in the cage, you know, you got to give your respect to, but there's certain fighters that just step it up. They can take the punishment, and they dish it out, just keep on going. And Lopez fits under that criteria as well. I mean, he just goes 100 miles an hour, decent technique at times. He can get a little bit wild in his aggression, but for the most part, he's a technician along the way. And again, well-rounded game, has a little bit of offensive wrestling, has some jiu-jitsu to go along with it. He can beat you on the feet. Very dangerous, you know, overall, and a very solid game. So what you can expect, but he does tend to fade at times with his aggression comes at, you know, cardio drain at times as well. And as the fight progresses, I mean, it kind of gets closer. And again, defensively, he is hittable and he does put himself in some spots where I think his fight IQ at times and his aggressiveness kind of hinders him and leaves him in some bad spots. And he cannot make those mistakes against Bermudez. Bermudez, he's more well known for his grappling game. And man, what a grappling game it is. This guy's a whiz on the ground. I mean, I was comparing this. I was talking to Brian the other day about this just briefly, and I was saying, man, it's like a spider web with this guy. I mean, he gets you trapped in his web. He starts working his jiu-jitsu skill, and you know, he's going to eventually get you. The more you play in his guard, the more time he gets around your neck, any limb, he's going to get you, man. I mean, you don't want to play that game with Bermudez. Very dangerous on the ground. So this is not a game that Lopez wants to play. He wants to keep this fight upright. He wants to sprawl brawl and, you know, obviously do some damage where he can, because again, Bermudez has an issue defensively. I think standing, I think his striking is kind of a work in progress. It's improving. Obviously in his last fight, he got a little bit more confidence. He was able to have some success on the feet as well. But I mean, make no mistake, Bermudez doesn't want to play the stand up game with Lopez here, I think as a whole, because I think Lopez is going to be able to absorb some of those punches that come his way. And I don't think Bermudez is going to be able to take the heat as it goes from Lopez. Now, again, on the ground though, I mean, Bermudez is the type of fighter that can be losing this fight and then latch onto a submission at any moment and get the upset win. So that's what makes him so dangerous. But again, at the current price, it is a little bit more competitive and it is a little bit more tricky to bet this fight, because I can see Bermudez winning this fight and eventually, you know, catching Lopez in his trap and winning this fight. But at the same time, it's kind of tough to lay that chalk. But on the other hand, at the opening price that you guys came in and gobbled up, I think, again, some decent value of plus 225 on Lopez around that spot. So I understand it. I respect it. It's a dog or pass situation at the betting window, because I do think Bermudez has a really good shot at winning by submission. So if you're going to bet this fight, honestly, I think that's the way to go. I don't see Bermudez knocking him out. If he wins this fight, it's probably going to be by submission. So if you can find a prop out there, Bermudez by submission, take a stab at that. If not, I would probably stay away, or it's a dog or pass situation, because I think Lopez has a path to victory, and it is by fighting smart, keeping this fight upright, and just kind of picking apart Bermudez along the way. Now, will he stay disciplined and do that? We'll see how it plays out. But the pick for me is Bermudez, because I think he does eventually find that finish, even if he is losing this fight.
Yeah, Manny Bermudez is one of the more impressive ground fighters that I've seen in the bantamweight division that's debuted in the last couple years. You know, this is a guy that has an awesome nickname, the Bermudez Triangle, and then he catches people in these chokes, and he's been able to win by submission in both of his UFC fights so far. He's a very exciting up-and-coming prospect. Lopez, on the other hand, is a guy that is one of those balls-to-the-wall prospects that is just going to fling everything he can at his opponents and hope that he's able to do enough to either put them away quickly or sway the judges in the first couple rounds, because efficiency is not the big part of Lopez's game. I mean, you saw that on his appearance on the Contender Series, where, you know, he started extremely strong against Steven Peterson and then gassed out and was able to survive and win. And then in his UFC debut, he took on Albert Morales and again was just very, very aggressive and gassed out again and was able to hang on and win. So, you know, this is a guy that is going to throw a ton of flying knees and crazy attacks at Bermudez. And if he was just a little bit more efficient, it would make his case for winning this fight a lot better, because Bermudez isn't that great of a striker. He's not that great of a wrestler. So if Lopez is just able to conserve himself a little bit, he might be able to just outpoint and outwork Bermudez without getting caught with a takedown or put on his back or without slowing down and giving up an opportunity for Bermudez to take advantage. So overall, I actually think Lopez is probably going to win the first round, but then he's going to slow down and Bermudez is going to have an opportunity to take over, whether Lopez starts to get sloppy or Lopez starts to gas or Lopez leaves himself wide open for something, or maybe Lopez just puts himself in a position where Bermudez pulls guard and then Lopez can't untangle himself because he's too tired and can't just brute force his way out. So I think at some point Lopez slows down and Bermudez gets this fight to the floor, whether it's on his own back or with a takedown, and then Bermudez takes over with his submission game and taps out Lopez. So my pick is going to be Manny Bermudez. Now, moving on to the main event of the preliminary card in the bantamweight division, we have Jimmy Rivera, who is 22-2, taking on Aljamain Sterling, who is 16-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Rivera open minus 265, the comeback on Sterling plus 185. We're looking over at BetDSI right now. We are seeing minus 145 for Rivera, the comeback on Sterling at plus 115. So huge drop in price. I mean, obviously the opener was not a good one. Plus 185 on Sterling. I don't blame any of you for coming in on that price. Some serious value there, because this should be a competitive fight. I mean, you're talking about two of the best bantamweights in the world for sure going at it here. Two guys that are in line for a potential title shot. The winner obviously takes a huge step forward here. And we've seen, I mean, like I said, two of the best competing against each other here. So I like the matchup. I think both of these guys are capable of having their moments in the fight. And it's a tough one. I mean, I could see it realistically going back and forth. I think Jimmy Rivera is the more technical, old school type of striker, I guess. I mean, just he's going to, I think, be the faster striker, the more accurate striker overall. I guess according to the stats, I think Sterling's a little bit more accurate, but the way Rivera goes about his striking, I think is just a little bit more, like I said, standard, but at the same time effective in a lot of ways. So he's going to present a lot of problems for Sterling, I think, with that striking style that he presents. Now, Sterling is a little bit more unorthodox is what I'm trying to spit out here in his way of striking. I think Sterling's kicking game is obviously better than Rivera's overall. I think he can definitely utilize some of his length in this fight, and he continues to get better. So I think even though Rivera has a pure edge in striking, I think, again, that unorthodox ability of Sterling on the feet and the problems that he can present with his kicking game and the power that he has behind him as well can definitely present Rivera some problems. But it's, I think, Sterling's improvement over the last few fights that has really amazed me. I mean, I think since that loss to Moraes, I mean, he's come on very strong. I know that he – you know, I mean, that he suffered that knockout loss fast in that fight, and Moraes is kind of riding a winning streak to the point where he's going to get a title shot now. So it's not a bad loss, but still, I think it woke him up a little bit. And he went out there and destroyed Brett Johns, and you know, he got the decision, but I mean, it was a very clear, dominant decision. I was surprised how easy he was able to beat a quality fighter like Johns. So I think he stepped up his game in that fight. And again, in his last fight against Stamen, I mean, Stamen was definitely an up and coming guy on his way, what looked like to be for a title shot. And again, he could potentially get there, but Sterling derailed that. And I think he's, again, focused. He's getting better physically. He's in better shape. This is the best shape I've ever seen him in. I mean, he's performing his best right now outside of that knockout loss to Moraes. So Rivera, at the same time, you could say a lot of the similar things. I mean, he suffered his loss to Moraes as well. He got knocked out. So these guys are in the same boat there. Again, a respectable loss. But before that, they're on a crazy good winning streak over solid opponents overall. Now, Rivera came back and bounced back with a solid win over Dotson. We all know Dotson's game. I mean, you can say what you will. I know he was a flyweight now, you know, and this loss was a bantamweight, but still, Dotson a very tough out no matter what weight class it is. So that's a very good win to get back on track for Rivera. Quality opponent, but I think how this fight plays out again, it'll kind of be back and forth, but I think Sterling's going to be able to kind of play his game and suck Rivera into that trap a little bit, where Sterling ends up spending some time maybe on Rivera's back and kind of getting this to the point where he's going in for a takedown or up against the cage, gets position on Rivera and just kind of blankets him a little bit along the way. And in space, I think he's utilizing that kicking game to the point where it's going to cause Rivera with a lot of problems. I could even see Sterling maybe catching Rivera with a head kick along the way and presenting some serious issues there too. So I think it'll be competitive. I think if it hits the scorecards, it could be a split decision type of fight. But I think if we're going to see a finish in this fight, I think it's more so Sterling than anything else. I think he's capable of finishing this fight. So I like his chances on the cards, or honestly, if it plays out where somebody gets a finish, I think it's going to be him to do so. So I like the chances that, you know, he's got as an underdog still, even at the current price. I know it's dropping, and but we're going to continue to see action coming back on Rivera as well. So I would play the watching game with this line. If you like Rivera, I think we could see it drop a little bit more, but I could also see it climb. So before the fight actually takes place, we're going to see this line continue to fluctuate back and forth a little bit. So the timing is everything for this fight. For Sterling backers, like I said, I think a plus money here in this pick 'em type of fight, I think there could be some value there. So let's see how it plays out. I do like Sterling in this fight. I think, like I said, it's what have you done for me lately? Both these guys have been good, but I just think Sterling has improved more. And I think right now he's just on another level. And I like what I see from him. So the pick is Sterling to win.
Yeah, both of these guys are right up there near the top of the bantamweight division. And both of them have been thwarted by Marlon Moraes. But I think they're still just right there, just a couple wins away from being right in title contention. With Jimmy Rivera, I thought that it was a nice bounce back performance against Dodson after the Moraes loss, but you know, that's a fight that he should win. John Dodson is known for basically looking for the big heavy haymaker, and Rivera is a guy that has a high pace and excellent boxing. And as long as he didn't get caught, I mean, I think that was a given that Rivera was going to win at least a decision. With Aljamain Sterling, though, I think what's really impressed me is since his loss to Moraes, he's taken on two extremely talented fighters that have excellent ground games, and he has been able to completely thwart them. And both of those guys, Brett Johns and Cody Stamen, were on a huge roll in the division, and Sterling was able to not just win, but win very convincingly on the ground. The first one against Johns, just a really impressive, overpowering performance against a guy that is really well-rounded. And then most recently against Stamen, I mean, that was a submission of the year candidate with that knee bar. So if this fight goes to the ground, I know that Jimmy Rivera has a wrestling background, and while he doesn't typically use it offensively, he's mainly more using it defensively to stay upright and utilize his boxing. But if this fight does go to the ground, I think Jimmy Rivera is going to be in big, big trouble. Aljamain Sterling is just so impressive on the canvas with his, not just his offensive wrestling ability, but his utilization of unorthodox techniques on the ground, the types of submissions he goes for. I mean, he just puts people in very uncomfortable positions. And the thing that I think has impressed me the most with Sterling isn't just his ground game, but it's been the improvements in his stand-up. You know, he's still not going to be the type of fighter that's going to be knocking people out on the feet, at least not yet, from what I've been able to see. But he's improved his stand-up to the point where He is at least able to hold his own long enough to get fights to the floor if he needs to. And he can actually outpoint some people that are really scared, of going, being put on their back. I mean, you saw that, in the Hayden Burrell fight, Sterling actually, that was primarily, you know, that during the stand up portion, Sterling actually was holding his own and getting the better of Burrell at times. So, I've been really impressed with the improvements that Sterling's made in his stand up. And that's despite the knockout loss to Moraes. In this fight, if Rivera is able to keep it upright the whole fight, then yeah, he's got a good chance at winning, but I don't think he will. And I think that when it is standing, he's going to be really concerned about the takedown, and it's actually going to give Sterling some opportunities to score some points in the stand up. So I think this fight's going to be competitive, but with that huge threat of what Sterling can do on the ground, I think it's going to force Rivera to hold back a little bit on the feet, and then Sterling is going to capitalize. So I think Aljamain Sterling ends up winning a decision, if not potentially getting a submission victory and pulling off the upset here. So Sterling's going to be my pick. Now, moving on to the main card on ESPN, we have a featherweight contest between Andre Feely, who is 18-6, and Miles Jury, who is 17-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Jury open -195, the comeback on Feely +155. Rain out looking over at BetDSI, another price drop as we see Jury is currently -150, the comeback on Feely +120. So my margins have tightened up again, and there is more action coming in Feely's way. And again, another case of what have you done for me lately? And man, what a disappointment I'm in personally for the run that Miles Jury's been on lately, man. I think this guy's a very talented fighter, and I thought he was on his way at lightweight before that Cerrone loss. To really great things. I mean, what a well-rounded skill set this guy has. I mean, Jury has talent everywhere. He's got some length for the weight class. Again, he's dropping to 145, but I was talking about lightweight. I mean, had some length to go along with a real technical skill on the feet, some underrated power on the feet, some outstanding wrestling, some jujitsu. I mean, again, a well-rounded fighter, but not just solid everywhere. I mean, I think way above average in those areas and improving. You know, like I said, a couple years back, I thought this guy was going to be a future title contender, at least, or possibly a champion, a future champion. That's how in high regard I held him, right? So, you know, coming in, suffering the loss that he did against Mendez and getting just beat like he did. I mean, it was just getting caught. I know Mendez has a lot of power. Mendez has, you know, one punched tons of people in his career, you know what I mean, with that kind of power that he has. He's got that, you know, kind of power that can stop you right on your tracks. But still, I was expecting more from Jury. The loss against Oliveira a few fights before that as well, I was expecting his submission defense to be a little bit better. So it's just like he's not focused right now. I mean, I think that his career kind of got derailed a little bit after that loss to Cerrone, and he just has to find his rhythm, find himself back on track a little bit and see where he goes. And this is not going to be an easy fight because Feely has a lot of similarities. I mean, these guys match up relatively well. They're about the same height, you know what I mean? They both have that kind of length for the division a little bit. They're both capable of doing some good things on the feet. They both have a well-rounded game in underground as well. I think Jury does have the wrestling edge in this spot, but Feely's wrestling defense has improved quite a bit. And again, Feely offensively, I think Jury has a better submission advantage, obviously, but Feely's submission defense has improved a lot as well. So I don't think it's going to be easy for Jury to kind of take advantage of some of those flaws from Feely, but I think it's going to be a competitive decision either way. And I think Feely is actually probably more of a threat right now on the feet as far as a pure one punch knockout artist than Jury will be. So I think if this fight stays on the feet, which I think they will and are capable of doing so because both these guys can kind of stifle each other as far as wrestling goes. If anything, I think Jury is going to be maybe the one attempting to get those takedowns and gets top position. But for the most part, if this stays on the feet, I think it'll be a threat both ways, but I think Feely is probably a little bit more dangerous in that aspect. But I think Jury's going to adapt again. Jury's going to look to slow this fight down a little bit if he does feel like he's in trouble on the feet. And I think that he just has a slight edge in getting the fight, dictating the fight where he wants it, whether it's, again, kind of slowing things up, holding Feely up against a cage, grabbing a takedown where he needs it, and just kind of edging this out along the way. So it's going to be a tough, hard-fought win for Jury, but I think he probably does get it done. But it's a tough one to bet. I mean, I wouldn't exactly lay the chalk on Jury right now based on what we've seen lately. So again, another spot where I understand the dog action coming in early on Feely, and I can respect that. You know, I think Feely's honestly been the better fighter recently for me, at least in my opinion. I think I've seen some more improvements from Feely, and I think Jury's kind of a bit on a decline. So with all that said, I still think Jury can edge his fight out and get back on track, and we'll see if he can stay focused and get himself, you know, kind of headed in the right direction from here on out. So the pick is jury to get a very solid win over a very game and improving Feely.
And I'm right with you. My main issue isn't really how Jury responded after the Cerrone loss, because, you know, I actually think that he performed pretty well, when he dropped down to 145, especially, the win over Rick Glenn. I think he, you know, was very convincingly the better fighter there and just proved it with a one-sided decision. My main issue is his most recent fight where Chad Mendes just completely obliterated him with that huge shot that he caught him with. That was the, you know, Jury's been hurt a couple times in fights, but that was the first time that he's ever been knocked out or TKO'd. And I'm a little concerned how he's going to respond to that. Sometimes fighters, they bounce right back. They get on the horse and they're the completely same guy. And sometimes fighters are really tentative and they're afraid to pull the trigger because, what could happen if they leave themselves open and get caught again? You know, sometimes guys get a little risk averse when they are put in a situation where they get knocked out. And, with Jury, I mean, he is still incredibly talented. We all know that. I mean, the guy has a terrific ground game. He has good hands. He's got good power. He has good size and length for the division. So he's got all the tools. It's just, will he be able to put them all together? Because he should be able to beat Feely. I mean, Feely is a talented striker that has a pretty well-rounded arsenal on the feet. I think Feely mixes up his kicking game a lot better than Jury. So, if this is a pure stand-up fight, Feely will definitely be in it, and it'll be competitive because of what he's able to mix in, with his kicks, with his knees, with his elbows, compared to Jury, who primarily just uses his boxing. But if this fight goes to the floor, I think, Feely, who at times looks like he's got decent wrestling and at other times just gets put on his back and embarrassed. If Jury's able to get his ground game going, I think Feely's going to be in big trouble because, you know, Jury definitely has a strong jiu-jitsu game, good submissions. He can be stifling from top position. So, I'd expect Jury to be able to win this fight for sure if it goes to the floor, but I think he can win it on the feet too. I think his hands are definitely better than Feely's. It's just, he just has to be careful with everything else Feely's going to be throwing at him. So I'm going to side with Miles Jury here. I think he gets the job done, but I am definitely a little concerned how he responds to that knockout loss. Now, moving on and moving up to the welterweight division, we have Vicente Luque, who is 14-6-1, taking on Brian Barberina, who is 13-5. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Luque opened -385. The comeback on Barberina at +265. Right now over at BetDSI, it's Luque -450. The comeback on Barberina +330. I'll try not to spend a lot of time on this fight. Of course, I've been long-winded enough already on this podcast. So with that said, I mean, there's no question who the better fighter is. It's Luque. Across the board, you could check it off. Stand-up game, his ground game, his wrestling. I mean, there's no question. He's the more high caliber fighter in this spot. So he should win this fight. That's why you're seeing the line where it is here as well. But I'm not disrespecting Barberina by saying that. In fact, he's grown on me quite a bit. I think this guy is a very solid fighter. We were talking about, again, I've said Warrior a few times throughout this podcast. Barberina is another one, man. I mean, he's a tough guy. He's hard to finish. He steps it up and to the point where even against high quality competition and, you know, high caliber fighters, he ends up making life miserable for him a lot of times. He's not an easy guy to get rid of. He's in your face. He keeps on bringing it. I mean, look at the fight with Leon Edwards, for example. I mean, Edwards obviously won that fight, deservingly so, but Barberina made life miserable for Edwards along the way, made it a very competitive fight, and that's what he has in him. I mean, you're going to get his best shot, and you cannot take a moment off in this fight because Barberina is definitely going to make life miserable, like I said, for you. So, I mean, he's there to win it. I mean, he won't quit trying. You're going to have to basically put it on this guy. And I think Luque can, obviously. Luque's capable of actually finishing, I think, Barberina. Again, I mentioned that Barberina is a pretty tough guy to stop, but I think if anybody's capable of doing so, Luque has that one-punch knockout power. He's got those submission skills that if he gets Barberina in trouble early on, he could hop on something and probably finish the job. So I could see it happening. Not a guarantee, obviously, because, again, Barberina's tough as nails. So I'll just stop it there. I think if it hits the scorecards, Luque is going to win. I think if there's a finish, obviously, it's Luque as well. So it's his fight to lose. I mean, if he should even if Barbarina makes it a kind of a tough fight as it goes a little bit, if Luque can't get rid of him early on and if he hits the scorecards, it probably will be closer than all of us think. But that said, Luque still should get the nod. So hard not to pick Luque in this fight. And I mean, I love his skill set. He's just such a fun fighter to watch.
Yeah, I think this is a really, really tough matchup here. You know, Brian Barbarina is a guy that I've actually made quite a bit of money on in the past because of his toughness. When he was taking on fighters that don't have very good gas tanks, he was able to survive early and then win either a decision or by finish against guys like Sage Northcutt and Warley Alves. Made, you know, pretty good bets, live betting when he was a huge underdog after the first round. But this time around, you know, Vicente Luque is not really a guy that's known for slowing down. And what's really scary about Luque is he's a guy that doesn't just win, he has finished every single one of his victories inside the octagon, and that's 7 wins. And the only time that he's lost so far in the UFC has been when he took on really talented wrestlers that were good at getting the fight to the floor, and they were able to take him down and keep him down for all 3 rounds. And that's just not Brian Barbarina's style. Barbarina is, you know, a guy that has pretty decent Muay Thai skills. He's got good power, but what's really been helping his cause has been his toughness. And sometimes you can be too tough for your own good. And I think, Barbarina is going to eat some serious shots in this fight against Luque. There's definitely a good chance that Luque is the first guy that finishes Barbarina, whether it's by his hands or if he gets this to the floor. Luque has an exceptional ground game, and he could submit Barbarina as well. So, I mean, realistically, the only way I see Barbarina winning this fight is if Luque almost knocks him out and then just blows his entire gas tank trying to put him away, because that's just what he's used to doing, is finishing fights, and isn't able to do it and gasses, and then Barbarina takes over. But I just think that that's not a realistic path to victory here. So I think more often than not, and probably 9 times out of 10, if not more, Vicente Luque wins this fight. So he's going to be my pick. Now, moving on and dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Alex Caceres, who is 14-11 with 1 no contest, taking on Kron Gracie, who is 3-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Gracie open -285. Caceres at +205. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, we're seeing Gracie at -305. Caceres at +235. So line margins have tightened up. Looked like it was a fairly solid opener. Always tough to set a Gracie line at times. No doubt about that with the family tradition and history. And of course, it's nice to see the UFC bring in a Gracie in, and he's at featherweight to boot. And man, I'll tell you what, Kron Gracie's a fun, undefeated fighter to watch. And of course, again, like I said, with the legacy, you know what he's made of, and it's a ground game. The ground game is where it's at. I mean, he has sub victories over Kawajiri and Takoro. And for those of you guys that have been following the sport for a while, you know that's no easy feat. So, I mean, this guy is a whiz on the ground. He's been brought in again to make some waves in the featherweight division, and I think he could do so. Obviously, his stand-up skill is a developing project. I mean, he needs to, you know, obviously all fights start on the feet, so he needs to keep on working on that and present some problems for his opponents. He's getting a little bit better. He's not a fish out of the water completely standing, but again, I think as far as experience level goes on the feet, Caceres is far ahead of him. I mean, he's fought with a lot of good strikers. So far in the UFC, the experience level that Caceres has faced overall is, there's definitely a discrepancy there compared to Gracie. So I think Gracie's going to want to get this fight to the ground, do what he does best, not fiddle around too much, get Caceres back and try to finish this fight. And I think he's more than capable of doing so. Obviously, the odds indicate that as well. And that's kind of how it should play out. But again, the intriguing factor here, I mean, it is what it is. It is. If Gracie does not get this fight to the ground, could Caceres do some damage and possibly make life miserable for Gracie and kind of utilize that experience that he does have in his back pocket to win this fight? So you can never count Caceres out. I'll tell you what, this guy's always been underrated throughout his UFC career, and he's put on some heck of performances through, you know, throughout. And I think he's going to need to have another special one though, to pull off this upset against Gracie. So I think eventually Gracie, even if it doesn't start off that well for him, I think eventually he does find his spot. Caceres will give him a spot to take his back, or, you know, in a scramble or something of that nature. And Gracie's going to get the submission win. Cause I don't think, even though Caceres' sub defense has improved against a guy like Gracie, it's not going to be enough. So Gracie gets the win. And again, if you could find a submission prop, there's not going to be a tremendous amount of value on him, but I think it's Gracie by sub here.
And I'm right with you. Gracie has really showcased an immense talent on the floor. And you saw that with the win over Kawajiri. I mean, that's a quality win. That's a guy that had a really strong run in Japan, a strong run in Strikeforce, and then a decent run in the UFC as well. So for him to go out there and really take care of business against somebody like that really speaks volumes for me. You know, Kron Gracie's ready to fight at the UFC level. And Alex Caceres is a perfect test for that. This is somebody that's not afraid to throw down, not afraid to open themselves up. Caceres has had some competitive fights against some really talented fighters, you know, like Yair Rodriguez. So this will be an excellent test to see where Gracie's at as he makes his UFC debut. Is he ready immediately to be thrust into, you know, a top 20 fight or maybe even a top 15 fight with a win? We're going to see. We're going to see how he performs here, because he's going to be tested on the feet for sure. Caceres has a pretty good hands, pretty decent boxing skill, but he also isn't that amazing with his takedown defense. Although, while Caceres is pretty good on the ground, I don't think he's anywhere near the level of Kron Gracie. And if he winds up on his back, he's going to be in big, big, big trouble. So, I'm really looking forward to this fight. I think that Kron Gracie is talented enough to avoid taking a ton of damage on the feet before he shoots in and gets this fight to the floor. I think at some point he gets this fight to the floor, and we're going to see what, Caceres is made of, because he has definitely been submitted in the past. He's been out grappled in the past. And I think, you know, this fight was probably made for a reason, and it's going to be a good opportunity to really showcase what Gracie's made of. And I think, that he does get this to the floor, and at some point he does either tap out, Alex Caceres, or, maybe get a technical submission if Caceres is, too tough to tap out. So my pick's going to be Kron Gracie as well. Now, moving down to the women's strawweight division, we have Courtney Casey, who is 8-6, taking on Cynthia Calvillo, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things, Sor?
Calvillo -285, Casey +205. Looking over at BetDSI, it's Calvillo -325, comeback Casey +250. Line margins have tightened up. More action coming in Calvillo's way. Don't blame people. I mean, Casey, obviously, she gets respect out there because, I mean, again, look at her resume in the UFC. She's fought nothing but solid competition, especially 115 pounds. I mean, she's right there. She's kind of a gatekeeper is a very tough out, obviously. All gatekeepers should be, but that's exactly her role, I think, at 115 pounds in the UFC right now. So you got to respect that. And, you know, a good gatekeeper she is, because she can pull off those victories and kind of send you back down to the lower ranks. And that's the spot that she's in here against Calvillo. Calvillo, of course, has that fast rise. I mean, she, you know, had a setback, obviously, against Esparza recently, but she got back on track. A lot of people were kind of counting her out after that. And in her last fight, she did get back on track. And it was impressive, man. I mean, she kind of showcased what she had to against a very dangerous opponent. And she got the fight to the ground and was able to win that fight in dominant fashion against Botello. So you got to give her credit for that. I mean, again, she kind of rebounded mentally after a tough loss to Esparza, got back on track a little bit. So I think Calvillo is going to have to do a lot of the same thing here against Casey, because on the feet, I think it'll be close and competitive on the feet, because Calvillo is definitely developing her striking. She's not no slouch on the feet at all. I mean, she has good movement. She hits with good angles. Her boxing's not that bad, but she's going to be on her bike probably in this fight and utilizing some of those angles, as Casey's going to be the one pushing forward. And I think she is the more aggressive striker. And I think if this fight doesn't get to the floor, I mean, it could sway the judges Casey's way because of that. But Casey does absorb some punishment. So if Calvillo on the feet does utilize those angles and her movement, she could score and do some damage along the way, even if it does stay up on the feet. But I think Casey's going to have a problem realistically stuffing Carvalho's takedowns here in this spot along the way, and Carvalho's going to get dominant position and probably end up grinding on Casey or maybe even finishing around the ground, I think, in this spot. It's not going to be easy because Casey has a great jiu-jitsu game in her own right, and Carvalho's going to have to be careful, actually, to tangle with Casey like that. But I think what we're going to see is at least Carvalho getting control and keeping position and probably edging out the decision victory over Casey, or again, if it's going to be a finish along the way, possibly. But I do think Carvalho's going to win this fight. Now, if she decides again, if you can't get this fight to the ground, and if it's purely a stand-up battle, I think it's going to be close. It'll be a very competitive fight when it hits a scorecard. So be cautious if you are betting this fight, especially where the price is now. The opener is obviously a lot better for, you know, betting action if you're going to take Carvalho. But as the line kind of increases a little bit, be careful because you know the state of MMA judging. You never know how they're going to score things, especially if it's a competitive fight. And if this stays standing, it could be very competitive. So I do think Carvalho gets it to the ground and wins that way. So I'm going to pick her to win this fight.
Yeah, realistically, the only way that Courtney Casey is going to have a chance to win this fight is if this fight stays standing for all three rounds, because Calvillo really hasn't been that impressive with her stand-up. You saw her end up losing that decision to Carla Esparza, and Esparza really isn't a world beater on the feet either. With Casey, she's actually not that bad of a striker. She pushes a decent pace. She has a little bit of pop in her hands, and she actually has a decent reach here. So if it stays standing for all three rounds, I don't know why it would. But if it does, that's really Casey's best path to victory. But obviously, Calvillo definitely is more ground-focused. She has pretty good wrestling and a sensational ground game. When she gets people on the canvas, they're in big, big trouble. And we saw that in her last fight. You know, her opponent was a much better striker than Casey is, and Calvillo was able to get the fight to the floor, take away her opponent's strength, and then put them in a bad position and eventually get the submission victory. And Courtney Casey really does not have a very good takedown defense, so I'm definitely concerned about how she's going to be able to stick around in this fight, because when you're only stopping 24% of takedowns against and taking on somebody that has about a 70% takedown success rate, when the takedowns are definitely Calvillo's best path to victory, this is going to be a tough one. So I think it's very unlikely that Casey keeps this fight upright. I think Calvillo gets it to the floor, and I think that at some point she probably submits Casey. So my pick is going to be Calvillo, probably by submission. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the lightweight division, we have James Vick, who is 13-2, and he's taking on Paul Felder, who is 15-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Felder opened -175, the comeback on Vic +135. That did not last. It's right now looking over at BetDSI. It's a pick on -115 either way. -115 Felder, -115 Vic. Across the Don Best screen I'm looking at right now, and Vic is a -120, -123 out there, -112 even at Pinnacle. So Vic is favored in a lot of spots on the Don Best screen, and he's a pick'em at BetDSI and some other spots as well. So no love for Felder. All the love towards Vic coming in, you know, early on. And it will continue at this point where the line is now to see two-way action, I'm sure, because Felder will get some action back at this price. I'll tell you what, this is an intriguing fight for sure. I mean, both guys have looked really well and then recently suffered a setback, obviously. James Vic getting demolished by Gaethje in his last fight after he went on what I think is a more than impressive run, you know, beating some of the fighters like he did with Duffy, Trinaldo, Trujillo, etc. I mean, that's a pretty good run for Vic, especially for me, considering I think Vic's biggest flaw, in my opinion, is on his chin. I've said in the past, and, you know, I'll say it again, he's got that kind of tall man's defense where he leaves that chin up and exposed at times, and, you know, he pays the price for it. You know, he's been, even the fights that he has not lost, he's been rocked at some of those, and he, you know, he suffered that price a little bit, but his defense has been better. Offensively, Vic is fun to watch fight. I mean, a guy has some length for the weight class, obviously, which helps him in a lot of ways. He got a big advantage with that length, and he knows how to use it. He's got skill too. He's just not this long fighter that doesn't know what he's doing on the feet. He's got good technical skill set. He's got some good knees. And good timings with those knees as well. So he's got those long limbs, utilizes them well, and is very dangerous. He can hit you and make it very effective along the way with his striking. Obviously, he's got a tremendous ground game. He's got some wrestling as well. He's got some good takedown defense. So everything you want to see in Vic is there, except, you know, I think, again, one of his biggest flaws is that chin. And Gaethje went out there and exposed it. Now, so we're going to have to see how mentally Vic is going to return in this fight. We know he suffered a tough weight cut. He said he has his weight cut under control. He's back on track with things. He's going to be better this fight. And I expect that to be partially true. But that being said, he fights a very tough opponent, Felder. Felder obviously suffering a setback in his last fight, but that was up a weight class at welterweight, taking a short notice fighting as Perry. Didn't go his way. He at least performed respectable in that fight, but I kind of didn't like what I saw though either. It didn't look like the Felder we're used to seeing. So I'm glad he's dropping back down to lightweight. And this is a definitely an interesting fight for him because I think he needs to get back on track. And again, talk about win streaks. I mean, he's looked phenomenal before that loss to Perry at welterweight, stepping in there and beating Stevie Ray like he did Oliveira. Charles Oliveira has been on obviously a pretty good run in his own right overall as of late. And Felder was able to get him out of there too. So, I mean, you like what you see in Felder, especially at lightweight. The guy has knockout power. He has a developing ground game that's only improving. He's got confidence. And I think his analysis that he's doing with the UFC right now, coming in as an analyst and breaking down fights, only makes his mind that much sharper. I mean, when you see things, when you're teaching and you see certain things and when you're analyzing fights, I think it does make you better. So I think Felder has a lot of advantages mentally coming into this fight. I think Felder knows what he can do, and possibly he needs to kind of close that gap, find the range, and possibly, you know, catch that chin of Vic and knock him out as well. And it's he's capable of doing that. Now, if this fight hits the scorecards, I think it's going to be a really close fight because Vic can definitely do some damage as well. Felder's going to have to be cautious also with that sick guillotine submission choke that Vic has. So a lot of dangerous things that Vic's going to be able to throw back at Felder. But I am leaning towards Felder a little bit. I know, again, the public opinion for the most part seems to be on Vic, and I respect that. I think he is a good fighter. But the way these guys match up, I think right now, especially at the current price, I would lean a little bit more towards Felder, honestly. I think he probably does find that spot. He closes that gap and gets through and punishes Vic. If not, it'll be a close fight. I could still see Felder winning on the cards as well, but it will be a lot more competitive. But I just like what I see from Felder, especially lightweight, and hopefully he gets back to somebody what he was doing before he went up to welterweight and fought Perry. So the pick is Felder. I think he has a possibility of getting the job inside the distance, getting it done inside the distance. So maybe Felder by knockout is what you want to look for and take a small stab at that as well.
And I'm right with you. This is actually a bit of a tricky fight because when James Vick takes on, you know, the top guys in the division, that's usually when he gets caught. You saw that against Benil Dariush. You saw that even against Michael Chiesa on the Tough Show when he got TKO'd. And then you most recently saw it against Justin Gaethje. But that being said, when he faces guys that are fringe top 15 fighters or fighters that maybe have been top 15 in the past or, guys that are close, he looks great and he's made some adjustments and Paul Felder is right in that area. So, this is a really intriguing contest because, you're not seeing Vic take on somebody with just this insane reaction times or crazy power that can just blast him out of the water. Felder's a guy that does offer, a very unique skill set in terms of the variety of attacks that he has. He can do a lot of spinning attacks. His kicking game is very good. So, he's definitely capable of catching Vic with something nasty. But he's also coming off of a pretty ho-hum performance there where he, you know, he showed a lot of heart, but it wasn't his best fight when he moved up to welterweight to take on Mike Perry. He got his arm broken in that fight. He got outworked. You know, he just, it really wasn't that great of a fight for him. Even if it did go to split decision, it really shouldn't have. So now that he's dropping back down to lightweight, I think we're going to see what he's capable of again at 155 pounds. Vic is very long and has pretty good power in the division, and he has a very good ground game. But we've also seen Felder survive on the ground against Charles Oliveira, one of the best submission artists that's ever competed in the UFC. So I'm not too concerned about Felder getting caught by something unless maybe it's some kind of modified guillotine choke because, Vic actually is able to use those arms to great effect and can catch people with that guillotine at any point if they leave their neck exposed. I don't care how good your submission defense is. So that's one thing that Felder will definitely have to be careful of. He shouldn't be shooting in for takedowns, or if he is, he shouldn't be just diving in neck first. And on the feet, I think Felder mixes it up a little bit better, but Vic does have the length, and while he is a bit of a slow starter, and that's where he's been caught in his two fights against the top 15, he also does make some pretty good adjustments as the fight goes on. So Felder really should be picking up the pace early and trying to take Vic out as quick as he can. Because the longer this fight goes, I'm actually a little bit concerned that Vic will make some adjustments and beat Felder. So overall, I think this fight's going to be really good. But I think Felder can survive Vic's submissions, and I think that he mixes it up well enough on the feet to either outpoint Vic or potentially catch him along the way. So my pick's going to be Paul Felder. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening in the heavyweight division. We have Francis Ngannou, who is 12-3, taking on Cain Velasquez, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Velasquez opened -170. The comeback on Ngannou, +130. Right now, over at BetDSI, we're seeing -160 for Velasquez. Comeback on Ngannou at +130. This line did shoot up to almost -300 odds, and now it's coming back down to reality a little bit. On Ngannou, like I said, around +130, +140 is on the down best screen. We're seeing about 160, between 155, 155s out there. Pinnacle actually has -158. And, you know, in Vegas, I'm actually seeing right now Westgate has, again, -160. So offshore, Vegas, Europe, all about the same market, around 160-ish or so. We're going to see this line, I think, climb a little bit again with Velasquez. I think it's going to be another spot where you have to pay attention. And if you're backing Ngannou at this point, you're going to have to kind of play the line-watching game and come in when you think the time is right. And vice versa for Velasquez. I think right now we're going to probably see the line head back up on Velasquez a little bit. So Ngannou backers, you probably, if you wait us a little bit, I think you're going to probably get a better line. Now, vice versa, like I said, as we get closer, maybe on fight day before the fight gets started, maybe we'll see the price drop a little bit more and people could hop back on Velasquez. So we'll see. Play that, the watching game as far as the odds go from here on out. But as far as the matchup itself, man, it's intriguing for sure. I mean, Cain Velasquez, first of all, we got to say this off the rip. He's been out for over 2.5 years. I think it may be good in some ways because he needs to heal that body. In my opinion, Cain Velasquez is the most talented heavyweight the UFC's ever seen. I mean, in the history of the sport, there's no heavyweight that's had more talent overall and had the total package like Cain Velasquez. I do think Stipe Miocic is the best heavyweight of all time. He's accomplished. You can't take that away from Stipe. I think he is the best, but potentially, and you know, it's kind of a shame, but Velasquez didn't lead up to that. I think he, again, talent for talent, he's the best striker. He's got the best wrestling. He's game on the ground as far as jiu-jitsu goes. I know, I mean, as far as jiu-jitsu goes, there's practitioners like Verdum, for example, that have a better jiu-jitsu game. But as far as a total package, like I said, put together, Velasquez, I think, has the highest skill set and the highest ceiling. So it's a shame that he hasn't kind of lived up to that. But he has a chance to get back on track against a very good fighter, one of the most dangerous fighters we've ever seen at heavyweight, obviously, in Ngannou. And before Stipe, when Stipe beat him after that, he suffered a couple, he suffered that loss to Lewis in that lackluster fight that was just horrible. I mean, all of us were just shocked how bad that fight ended up being. He just gave Lewis so much respect, but he did get back on track against Blades, thankfully. And he looked kind of more like himself. But again, mentally, I mean, Stipe almost kind of broke Ngannou, a lot of us thought, after that fight. I mean, the way he performed against Lewis. So hopefully he gets back on track. I want to see a great fight here. And this is, a head scratcher. It's a tough fight for me to call, to be honest with you, because I think Ngannou can definitely knock Cain Velasquez out. If any kryptonite in Cain's game at all, it's definitely that chin. I mean, he's been knocked out in the past. He's been rocked in other fights that he hasn't been knocked out in as well. So, I mean, Velasquez is susceptible to getting hit by, very good, powerful strikers and going down. So I think Ngannou definitely obviously presents that problem for Velasquez. But Velasquez is a very intelligent fighter. And again, with his skill set, I think he can stand up, no problem with Ngannou as well. I mean, Velasquez has good boxing. He's got knockout power. I mean, for crying out loud, this guy's athleticism. The guy can hit you with a wheel kick to the head for being a wrestler and that type of, you know, fighter that he is. I mean, he just, again, the athleticism he has is unbelievable. So Ngannou's going to have to be careful on the feet with Velasquez, but he's a smart fighter. He's going to be able to take this fight and try to take this fight, at least attempt to take this fight to the floor when he gets the opportunity, or get Ngannou up against the cage and kind of slow the pace of this fight down a little bit and try to utilize the same game plan Stipe had. So Stipe kind of laid out the blueprint for all wrestlers that are dominant like the Velasquez, but we saw in the last fight, it didn't kind of work out for Blades. I mean, he got caught early in that fight, Blades did, and that was it. So Velasquez cannot afford to do that. It happened to him before against JDS, and we could see a repeat performance of that. So we'll see how this plays out. Again, very intriguing. I think it's an interesting fight because if Ngannou could keep this fight upright, he definitely can win this fight. So it is, in my opinion, if the line right now is at a point where it's almost a bet on Velasquez, but at the same time, I want to see where Velasquez is. If we see him, the Velasquez that showed up in his last fight, even, you know, it's been a couple years, but against Travis Brown, I think that was a great performance. So I want to see that Velasquez show back up here against Ngannou. If that's the case, I have no hesitation betting Velasquez at this price, but we're just not sure we're going to get that. So with that said, it's hard to lay any chalk on Velasquez for me right now, even though I think he's the better fighter and he should win this fight. Cause like I said, by far, there's no heavyweight that has the skill Velasquez does, you know, in the whole planet. So I think that Velasquez should win this fight. Now, does he get it done? I don't know. We're going to have to see. But he is my pick, and he is the better heavyweight here. So we'll see if he gets it done. The pick is Velasquez. And obviously, if he wins this fight, I think it is going to probably be inside the distance.
Yeah, Cain Velasquez, Nick's right, is probably the most talented UFC heavyweight of all time. But he's also been so inconsistent with his performances because of the injuries that he suffered. I mean, this was a guy with a cardio for days. He had excellent power, great wrestling, and just was able to outwork and overwhelm anyone that he ever stepped into the cage against. The problem is the way that he trains, you know, he just pushes his body so hard that, you know, he put himself through some serious injuries, whether it was his knees or most recently his back. I mean, he had some really serious back surgery that did not go well. And that's primarily been the reason that he's been out for 2.5 years. I mean, he wasn't even getting licensed to fight because of some of the issues that were coming up from his injuries and surgeries. So that's the biggest question mark coming into this fight is how is Cain Velasquez doing in terms of his, you know, just physical health? If he's not the same fighter that he used to be in terms of his ability to shoot in and put people on their back, if he's not the same fighter that was able to push such an intense pace that no one could keep up with him, then he's going to be in huge trouble because Francis Ngannou is an absolute wrecking ball. I mean, we know it. And you don't have to be, you know, a super technically sound striker if you have that kind of power. You saw it against, you know, guys like Overeem and Andrei Arlovsky, guys that are good, solid technical strikers. And Ngannou just touches them and their chin just explodes. So, you know, Francis Ngannou is capable of ending this fight at any moment, at any time, for all 5 rounds. Although granted, I think he's clearly going to be most dangerous in the first couple rounds while he's freshest, as you saw in, the fight against Stipe, when it ended up going all 5 rounds. But, you know, clearly Ngannou is most dangerous early. And that's the big thing here is, will Cain be able to push Ngannou, past the first couple rounds, and then will he be able to take over? Will his conditioning be still impressive? Will his wrestling be good? We just don't know. There's a lot of question marks with this fight. Like if this was 5 years ago and Ngannou was still just as talented today as he was 5 years ago, and you just insert him back in time against Cain from 5 years ago, I'd say Cain wins 100% of the time. But right now I'm just so like, just there's too much uncertainty with Cain right now, and I just can't bet on that because as talented as he is when he's healthy, he's not the same fighter when he's not healthy. I mean, you saw he did not look good when he took on Fabricio Werdum and lost his title. You know, he was getting outworked. He was getting beat up on the feet. He was looking like he was getting tired. And then as soon as he really started getting worked over on the feet, he shot in for a give me takedown and ended up, just easily getting tapped out to a guillotine choke. So, if that Kane shows up, then he's in big, big trouble. But if, you know, the beater of worlds Kane shows up that dominated Junior Dos Santos twice, that crushed Brock Lesnar, then that's a completely different story. We just don't know. And because we don't know, I'd either side with the devil I know. And while Francis Ngannou can be inconsistent, as Nick mentioned in that Derek Lewis fight, it seems like he's, you know, figured out whatever was going wrong with his head and bounced back impressively against Curtis Blaydes, who's probably the second best wrestler in the UFC heavyweight division other than Kane. I'm going to side with the power, and I think Francis Ngannou does catch Kane at some point, but wouldn't mind to see the dominant Kane return, because, you know, the UFC heavyweight division could use that, although I don't think he would ever face Daniel Cormier for the title. But I would like to see that. But I think that at some point Ngannou touches that chin and Kane gets in big, big trouble. So I'm going to side with Francis Ngannou. I am not that confident about it because, like I mentioned, all the uncertainty around Cain Velasquez. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on ESPN. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send out to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this week.